For more than a year, while Muriel waitressed, I sporadically looked for a job, answering the few ads in the Times that seemed plausible, then some that looked less plausible. The one that came through was for Macy's, where I was hired as a temp to work in the huge greeting cards department on the ground floor, greeting cards in the fall meaning Christmas cards. Because I was good with numbers, those days at the Dunham Day School were paying off, I was soon at one of the two central cash registers, racking up sales so swiftly that the very nice, if somewhat flustered, woman who was head of the department would come and stand behind me, muttering, "Robert, you really don't have to go so fast." But I did have to go so fast. This was my first experience of a working-class environment, and I enjoyed the work and liked my colleagues. Maybe the regulars were used to the seasonal appearance of nerdy college grads. Certainly they were friendly and helpful. Most crucially, when in an emergency, I was plucked from my cash register to help dip scented candles. My salary was $45 a week, but it was a salary, and I was excited about it. With my first paycheck, and knowing that all employees had a discount on anything in the store, 15%, I think, I went to the book department and, after a crisis of indecision, bought two little golden books for two-year-old Roger, a book of nursery rhymes and what was to become one of the best-selling children's books of all time, The Pokey Little Puppy. I think the total expense, including tax, was 69 cents, which was something of an assault on our budget. But I was inordinately proud of having ventured out of the cave and brought home the essential bacon for my child. Muriel was bringing home the rent money from her waitressing tips. Before I got back from Cambridge, she had found a very agreeable apartment on the top floor of a brownstone on St. Mark's Place, when it was still mostly Polish and Ukrainian, long before it became the East Village. There was us, W. H. Auden, across the street, not that I would have known him if I'd seen him, a strip club down the block, which later became the Theater 80 St. Mark's, and a few abstract expressionist artists, among them Joan Mitchell, who shared our top floor and was a great neighbor, finding tactful ways to help feed us, snaking in an electric line when Con Ed did its worst, and when she moved out, leaving us a superb Joan Mitchell as a parting gift. It looked exactly right in our place, which we had furnished in the standard decor of young intellectual New Yorkers in the 50s. Bamboo blinds, Indian cotton bedspreads, bookcases made by stacking pine boards on bricks liberated from the street, and of course the famous Noguchi lamp with its crinkly white paper globe. Our rent was $96 a month, and we were usually on time with it, particularly after two, then three, close friends from Cambridge joined us. We were a commune avant la lettre. I think the subway still cost a dime, phone calls the same, the Times was a nickel. Cigarettes, which I'm afraid we still smoked, were something like 15 cents. Life was affordable. But hardly happy. I was drifting. Somehow, I met a sympathetic, rather vague woman named Evelyn Schrift, who ran a small publishing house called the Vanguard Press. It had published early Dr. Seuss, early Joyce Carol Oates, early Saul Bellow, and it was about to launch Auntie Mame, but it was hardly flush. Evelyn took to me, or rather felt sorry for me, and she gave me occasional French books to read and report on at something like $15 a go. Then I translated a very bad French-Canadian novel for her, its name, author, and content having fled from my memory. To get away from the distractions of our toddler, I would take my French novel over to Dick Howard's apartment while he was out at his job working for a dictionary publisher. I've never hated any work so much as I hated translating, not even dipping candles. Whereas Dick went on to become America's leading translator from the French, as well as a superb critic, teacher, and Pulitzer Prize-winning poet. I still didn't know what I wanted to do or could do, and found myself answering ads and undergoing uncomfortable interviews for jobs at advertising agencies, magazines. The New Yorker personnel person was particularly frosty, even banks, and publishing houses, which my background seemed most appropriate for. Though Macy's disagreed. At the end of my predetermined stint there, I was one of two temps out of several hundred to be invited to stay and train for a management job. Naturally, my vanity was gratified, but I was self-aware enough to know that the retail business was not for me any more than the academic world was. That didn't leave many alternatives for a young man with a degree in English literature. So, as the months crawled by, I decided to focus more on publishing, a world in which I knew nobody. But if you keep going, eventually you meet someone who sends you to someone else, and someone sent me to Harper's.